Thank you very much. It's great to be here again.
It's been about 20 months, actually, since we last spoke.
You've been counting.
September 04, it says here on my internet site.
A few things have happened since then.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, tell us about some of the highlights that have happened since then.
A few things. We did a nice tour to South Africa, and probably a little bit after I spoke to you that time, went to South Africa and did some playing over there with a few different bands. And that was great. And then I went on to Europe and hung out there for a little while, hung out in Germany. Not much playing, but just checking things out. Then got back to Australia and spent a lot of time last year in the rock scene with a band called Tamburlaine, which was put together by Ben Gillies, who's the drummer from Silverchair. He was sort of doing something while Silverchair were taking a break, doing a bit of a thing. And so we had some good times with that. Got into that different scene.
Yeah, because when we were talking back in September 04, you mentioned the possibility of recording a more funky, danceable type album. Where is all that up to?
Yeah, well, I have a few things recorded in the dance vein. Hoping there's a little 12-inch, or a couple of 12-inch will be coming out soon on a couple of different labels.
So what about Tamburlaine? Anything we recorded?
Yeah, we made a record. It was great. It was great to make a record, with such a big budget coming from that rock scene. And obviously the Silverchair name had a bit of clout, so it was quite a big budget. So we spent a lot of time making a record. It was good to spend, rather than when you make a jazz record, you usually only have enough money for a day and, maybe rope your mate in to mix it on his home computer. but we spend... probably a month in the studio there. I mean, I wasn't there for the whole time. Yeah, making a record. And then got to do all the fun things like making some video clips and getting on radio and doing a little couple of national tours, which was good.
Excellent.
So, yeah, it's a different scene.
Now, do you find it easy to come across from the genres and cross over? Does that come easy to you?
I think I'm getting better at it as time goes by. When I first joined this rock band, I'd played quite a bit of rock and stuff in the past, but never in a serious way, in terms of making an album and that sort of, and really getting that sound. And it was a real learning curve just working on those sounds. Coming from a jazz background, you think, I've studied a lot of music and got my technique pretty happening, this shouldn't be too hard. But it really is a really different thing just to get that rock sound happening in the groove and locking in and all that stuff, and the simplicity of the chords and the things you're using is really it's an art.
Do you find yourself looking for something more in that performance when you are playing those simplistic chords? Do you find yourself looking for something more in that at that time?
I usually find myself thinking, should I be doing less? Because I think really that's what it's about, especially when you get out there and it gets really loud and, it's really rocking. I think if you play too much or if you play a chord that's got too many notes in it, it kind of loses that, It's more about being big and being, rather than small and intricate.
And do you find when you do come back to jazz after, has it influenced the way you approach jazz then?
Yeah, definitely. I think spending time studying the rock music and also been checking out a lot more of the rootsy things of styles of music, the Ray Charleses and Jimi Hendrix and that kind of stuff. I seem to be moving with my jazz stuff. I seem to be moving away from the more avant-garde stuff, although we still do a bit of that. But I guess it's sounding a bit more, I don't know how you'd say it, but just a bit more earthbound, I guess.
Yep. and probably accessible as a result.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah. Any trio recordings coming up, Jared, at all? Or?
Yeah, we've just started, actually. We did a bit of recording the other day and sounding pretty good. So trying to do it over a bit of time for this next record rather than going into a studio for, a couple of days solid. Just do a bit of recording here and there, sit back, check it out, see what we need to do sort of thing.
On Wednesday night, Jonathan Zwartz, and you mentioned he was going to be performing a couple of his tunes as well.
Yeah, he's written a lot of good tunes. We had a residency at Cafe Sydney in, I think it was February, every Sunday in February, playing his music. We had about four or five Sundays, and we played a lot of Jonathan's music, which is kind of has a lot of Brazilian and Latin jazz influences in it.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of the tunes he was telling me have been influenced by some of Charlie Hayden's compositions. So, yeah, really nice melodic sort of tunes that he writes. So, yep. we might get out one or two of them at the gig. When you were playing the track before, it was so good to hear Warren Trout's groove. Mm. Again, he's been playing with Barnsley for the last year or so. So we haven't seen much of Warren on the jazz scene, or, you know, on the little funky scene around town. But just heard that he's sort of making his way back.
Okay.
Back to the people, which is going to be good. Because he's got such a unique, beautiful, beautiful groove.
Well, look, I wanted to throw you in the deep end a little bit, Jared, with a blindfold test. Now, people out there who don't know the famous downbeat concept, where we ask one of our notable musicians to listen to a piece of music without actually knowing who it is, and basically comment on it, try and guess who it is, and give us their take, basically, of who it is. So we're going to play a track now, and for the benefit of our guests, we won't tell anyone who it is. We'll see what Jared has to say after hearing this piece of music, but it does go quite long, so we won't hear the whole lot. And maybe to give a little hint, recorded back in 1995. Here's some great music from Australia.
Well, it would have to be Mike Nock on the piano.
Exactly right.
And you gave it away when, by saying it was an Australian record. And I think the only duo record that Mike's done in Australia is the one with Cameron Undy.
That's absolutely correct. Cameron Undy on the bass, recorded back in 1995. What about the piece?
Oh, well, I don't know. Was it one of Cameron's? It sounded very Cameron-like, yes, and yes, some sort of blues or something.
That you're right again. X is YZ is for blues was the name of the tune. What was your take on it?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great. So groovy. It was nice how they started off kind of pretty esoteric and then gradually made their way into that nice blues groove towards that part of the tune that we were just hearing there. And Mike's playing so great on it. Yes. You can hear the whole, you know, so much history of the music in his playing.
You can.
So many different things.
With so much focus on IR issues at the moment, Jared, we never really get to hear about the issues that musicians have to deal with in the workplace. What are some
IR?
Of the issues? Yeah.
Tell me about IR.
Industrial relations.
Oh, right. See, I'm so far removed from that world, I don't even know what it is.
But there must be a certain set of conditions that musicians have to deal with on a daily basis. I mean, superannuation would have to be one of them that you need to deal with yourself, wouldn't it?
Well, apparently. Someone was sort of telling me that the other day, but, you know. Well, I sort of got a theory on that whole thing, and that a lot of those things, of course, are geared to retirement. And I don't know many musicians who ever really want to retire.
No.
So so long as there's a gig around and you can get yourself out of bed in the morning, wheelchair up to the piano, you know, but you can make $50 for your dinner that night.
But I'm thinking along the lines of sitting in a smoky jazz club. And, you know, maybe you're not even reaching retirement age because of that passive smoking.
Well, I think, you know, luckily for me and people of my generation, well, I guess I've been playing professionally for about 15 years, I guess. So I've copped about that much smoke. And thank goodness now, it's there's not many places in Australia and New Zealand anyway where you can smoke near the band. That was definitely something that we used to have to deal with, but not so much these days, thank goodness.
But the musicians' union, do they have much involvement with, I guess, setting a minimum remuneration that you have to deal with? Or?
I don't think so. Maybe they do, but I don't know if, pardon me if I'm wrong, but I don't know if the musicians' union has much of a say at all, really. So I think it's really up to the musician, you know.
Yeah, you're basically dealing with the promoter or dealing with the
venue
owner and operator.
When someone rings you up and says, you know, here's a gig and we're going to pay you X amount, you know, you're not really going to say, hang on, I'll call you back 5 minutes. I'll just call the union and see if that's all right, you know. Yeah. It's either yes or no. Pay me more.
Now, since you've been in Sydney over the past, how many years has it been now?
I've been here for about, I'd be coming up to 7 years now.
7 years. How have you seen it? Have you seen an increase or decrease in working opportunities for jazz musicians here? You obviously cross over into different genres, so you know you're probably busier at other times. But if you were specifically just a jazz piano player, what do you think the scene would be like?
I think the scene in Australia is great, and I think it always has been. I think for bands that have got a unique thing, and push it hard and get it out there. It's pretty much goes for anything, really. But you see bands like Aaron Ottignon's band, Aranos, have got a unique flavour, and they're a band. You know, you know that you're going to see a band. They get out there, do lots of gigs, do the promotion and that sort of thing. So I think people in Australia are, you know, pretty keen to get behind that sort of a thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
when it's got an identity, I think, you know.
Yep. You've got to have a brand almost.
Yeah. Same goes for the good rock bands that are coming up these days. You know, bands like End of Fashion, people might know. You know, a young Perth band that have really just got out there. Obviously, they made a good album to start with, but just got out there on the road, worked hard trying to get their music on the radio. You know, it's all about having something really strong and getting out there and pushing it, I think. And I think there's a good opportunity for that sort of thing in Australia.
We've recently seen the closure yet again of the jazz club, the Soup Plus, here in Sydney.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes. Melbourne has a jazz nightly venue like Bennett's Lane. What do you think is the underlying reason Sydney can't maintain a similar sort of venue?
I think Bennett's Lane is pretty pretty unique, really, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, because they do have jazz six, or is it seven nights a week?
Seven nights a week, yeah.
And they've got two rooms.
Two rooms, that's right.
It's. I mean, that's almost an institution, really. I don't see that ever fading away. And the gigs aren't always packed down there. You know, it's a pretty small, it's a small thing again, you know.
Yeah.
But it is a good thing. I think, maybe Sydney's a bit more, it seems to be in Sydney, like you have venues like, say, the Basement and the Vanguard, which are really across-the-board sort of venues these days, which I think is great.
Mm.
I think it's great. You can go one night and see a great singer-songwriter, and then the next night see a Latin band, and then on the weekend a funk band, and then, you know, they might have a jazz gig on a Tuesday night sort of thing. So it keeps everybody on the ball, I reckon.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose it does.
Yeah.
It would be good, however, just to have a club. Know, if you were, you know, if you were specifically interested in jazz and I was turning up any particular night and going to see something, because you really can at Bennett's Lane when you're in Melbourne. It doesn't really matter. You can go along there and see top-class jazz any night of the week, something along the lines of our SEMA gigs and jazz groove type gigs every single night of the week, whereas Sydney really, for some reason, can't support that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it, you know, Sydney's a big city. I don't see any reason why something like that couldn't work. I just think it'd have to have the right person in charge and, market it really well, put it in the right location. I reckon something like that could do really well.
What's next on the horizon for Jared Masters?
We've got a few trio gigs coming up, obviously Wednesday night at the Wine Bank. Then on the weekend, we're heading down to Melbourne and Adelaide. Actually, yeah, we're playing at Bennett's on a Sunday. And then there's a nice new gig started up in Adelaide on Monday nights called Coma. And they were very impressed by the jazz groove thing here in Sydney, so they started up a similar type thing, and apparently it's going really well.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Yeah, a few people, Matt Keegan, Cameron Dale, have played there, gone over from Sydney and played there, and they say, you know, gets a good crowd, a younger sort of crowd, again, like the jazz groove thing,
mm-hmm.
so it's good.
Thanks again for joining me in the studio.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.